So it seems to me like more and more people are starting to try to figure out, like, what are we doing here? Like, on this planet, on this Earth, like, what's the purpose of life? I sort of see this manifest in kind of the anti-work crowd where people are like, is this what life is supposed to be? I'm supposed to wake up every day at 7 a.m. I commute for an hour, work until 5, commute home. I exercise for 30 minutes, cook for this amount of time, and then I have to get in bed so I'm not burnt out the next day. And it's just like rinse and repeat until I die. Is this really what life is about? And on the flip side, we have like the Sigma grind set folks, right? These are the people that are kind of like, okay, like I'm going to grind and like you got to grind to get ahead and you got to be an alpha and you got to go Sigma grind set. You know, that's really how you like you make it in life is you have the side hustle and you grow your side hustle. Then you have your side hustle and you try to hustle as much as you can. And then if you hustle a lot, then you can become successful and you can get lots of money and then like you can retire early. Right. There's the FIRE folks, which is financial independence and retire early. So these are people who are kind of thinking, OK, since life starts with retirement, the goal of life is to like step out of that grind as quickly as possible, make your millions so that you can enjoy life. So instead of retiring at the age of 60, what I'm going to do is try to figure out how can I retire at the age of 45 or 46 or 46 and a half, and then I can start living life. So I'm going to sacrifice the best years of my life so that I can enjoy the latter years of my life. And so I'm kind of listening to this stuff and I'm trying to really figure out what's the point of all of this? Is life really about going to work every day and kind of taking care of yourself and working on your mental health and working on your physical health and learning how to cook and eating nutritious food and then going keto and going paleo and all this kind of stuff until you die? Or is it about grinding, right? Isn't like side hustles and hustles and hustles and hustling your way to an early retirement so that you can really like start living life to the fullest at the age of 52? Is this what's going on? Like, what's happening here? And these are two different solutions, either mentally checking out of the capitalistic society because I reject this thing, or capitalizing on the capitalistic society and leaning into that. And I'm going to try to maximize it and get ahead. But both these groups of people, in my opinion, share one problem, which is they don't know what they're doing, right? There's no like purpose. There's no sense of purpose in life. People don't know what we're on this earth to do. And so they don't really know like how to live this life. And there's good actual data to support this. So if we look at, for example, pornography addiction is on the rise. And more people are consuming pornography. More people are getting addicted to pornography. And you may say, well, what does that have to do with life purpose? Well, it turns out that the variable that correlates the most with being addicted to pornography is a sense of meaninglessness. So as our life becomes meaningless, we start to consume more pornography because like we don't really know what we're doing. So I might as well watch some porn and get some dopamine and then I'll kind of like, you know, it sort of passes the time. That's one example. Another example, which is really scary, is actually suicide is on the rise. So we know that suicide is correlated with a sense of purposelessness in life, right? Like, what am I doing with life? There's really no point in being here. I'm suffering some right now, and there's no like end goal that makes the suffering worth it. So why not just check out a life? So it's kind of scary, but suicide is the number one cause of death amongst Asian Americans between the ages of 18 and 24, which is crazy, right? So if you're like an Asian American, kind of like I was, or I mean, I still am, but I'm not 18 to 24 anymore. The most dangerous thing to you in life is actually you. And why is suicide the number one cause of death for Asian Americans between the age of 18 and 24? It's because this is a group of people that is getting crushed by expectation. They don't really know what they're doing in life, right? So if you've grown up in the Asian American diaspora, you'll be kind of familiar with this. That you're essentially crushed by expectations. The whole world, usually your parents and your, you know, friend group and stuff like that, they tell you, hey, this is what life is about. They're like, look, in order to be successful, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this. They've got the formula figured out. You got to major in STEM. You got to work really hard. You got to get into a good college. You got to be at the top of your class in college. You got to go work at these really prestigious companies or become a doctor or whatever, and then you will be happy. And despite the fact that these Asian parents are pushing stuff on them so much, this pushing this formula for success, what we actually see is that Asian Americans are killing themselves at an alarming rate. And so our society has lost sight of what purposes. Like, we don't really know, like, what we're doing here. And so since we don't know what we're doing here, we have these, like, Sigma grind set kind of people that are like, I'm going to do all my grinding up front. But is that really the point of life? No one knows what we're doing here. And why is that? So the first thing that we have to understand is that a sense of purpose can't be given to you, right? It has to come from within. And if it could be given to you, then all the Asian American kids would be doing great because their parents are clearly giving them a sense of purpose. They're handing it to them on a silver platter. They're shoving it down their throat. They're saying, this is what you should do. This is what you should do. This is what you should do. But that doesn't work. Fundamentally, it doesn't work, right? And so then the question is, okay, like, so if it comes from within, like, what do we mean by that, right? So if a sense of purpose comes from within, like, look within yourself. Are we talking kind of like Oprah Book Club, like, oh, you got to, like, look within yourself and, like, you got to, like, oh, like, look so far within yourself and see, you find your purpose, you know? Is that kind of what we're talking about? Well, sort of. But I think it's way more scientific and way more, like, simple than that. It's not some weird, deep spiritual journey. We'll talk a little bit about that. But it's like literally our sense of purpose comes from within. If our sense of purpose comes from within, then why is it that more and more people are losing sight of that? Well, what's changed in the last 20 years? Let's take a look at it. So what's changed in the last 20 years is essentially an acceleration of technology. And what does technology actually do? So if we kind of think about it, what's happening in our society right now? The most fundamental major change that has happened in our society is that we have externalized our attention. So I don't know if you're like me, but this is something that I absolutely used to do. So when I was in med school, I needed to optimize things, right? So I had audiobooks, I had like audio lectures on my MP3 player, right? Because back then I had an MP3 player back in the day, 12 years ago. And so what I would do is I'd wake up in the morning and I'd turn on some kind of audiobook or something like that, right? Like podcast or something. And then I'd be like cooking and listening to something. Then I'd walk to the train and I'm listening to something. And then I get on the train and I'm like reading something, or maybe I'm on my Kindle or something like that. Then I'm at class and I'm paying attention there. And so every moment of my day, my attention is externalized. I'm listening to a podcast, I'm on social media, I'm playing a video game, I'm watching something. Even when I'm on the toilet, like, the scariest thing in the world is going to the toilet without your phone, right? Because, like, oh my God, what are we going to do then? So if we really look at it fundamentally, what is the change in technology? What change has technology wrought in our brains and on society? It has externalized our attention. So 100 years ago, we used to be, like, more attentional to our internal stimuli. And what's really interesting is there are some places where even technology has not figured out how to break into. So a great example of this is shower thoughts, right? The shower is the one place, because if things get wet, then we can't take our technology in there, where we have these really profound thoughts. We think so much in the shower and we start to make all these, like, amazing realizations in the shower. And why is that? Is the shower, is there something biochemical or physiological about the heat and the water, or maybe you take cold showers, you know, that sort of triggers all these profound thoughts? No, it's actually like, this is the only time that we're able to be with ourselves. This is the only time of the day that we're actually able to pay attention to ourselves. And so since we've lost touch with our inner voice, we don't really know what we think, we've struggled to find purpose. And how does that work? So let me give you all an example. So let's say I'm trying to figure out what I want to eat, and I'm trying to figure out what kind of food I like. Like, what kind of food do I want to eat in this world? But imagine for a moment that my tongue was completely numb and I couldn't taste anything, or my nose was clogged, because 70% of taste actually comes from your olfactory nerves. But whatever, all that stuff is numb. I got some COVID, got some olfactory problems, whatever, right? I can't taste anything. And so then how do you imagine I'm going to try to figure out what food I like? So what I end up doing, if my internal senses are numb, I'm going to look at someone else. I'm going to see someone else. I see, oh, wow, they're eating a hamburger. That looks great. I'm going to eat that. Look at that. They're enjoying their hamburger. They're taking these big bites. It's so juicy. It looks amazing. And then I decide, okay, I'm going to eat a hamburger. So I take a first bite of a hamburger. I don't taste anything. I finish the hamburger. I'm like, you know what? That doesn't really work for me. So I'm going to look at someone else. I see, oh, wow, that person's got some ice cream. Look at that. They're like licking the ice cream. It looks really awesome. It's so colorful. It's got sprinkles on top. That looks totally lit. Let me do that. And then I try the ice cream, but I'm numb. So I can't taste anything. And so what ends up happening? I go through life looking at what other people, makes other people happy, and then I try to duplicate it, hoping that I myself will become happy. Not happy, I'll enjoy the food, right? This is what happens. And if we look at literally, there's like neuroscience evidence of this, that if you look at what technology usage does, it doesn't matter if it's social media, video games, whatever, it numbs our emotional circuitry. It literally shuts down our ability to like be in touch with ourselves. So we know that playing a video game for even a brief period of time will suppress our amygdala and our limbic system, the emotional circuits of our brain. We will like literally suppress those internal signals, which is exactly why we use the internet. So when I'm feeling bad about myself and I have too much work to do and I'm feeling overwhelmed, what am I going to do to fix that? I'm going to go look at cat videos. Because the second I open up a cat video, I suppress all of my internal signals. And this is precisely what's going on. We're going through life trying to figure out what we want to do. We're looking outside of ourselves for possible answers. We see this person is enjoying a burger. We see that person is enjoying ice cream. But the whole time, we are actively numbing our tongue and our olfactory senses. So none of it seems to work. And when none of it seems to work, this is how we end up with people developing the Sigma grind set. Think about this for a second, okay? People who are doing the Sigma grind set and want to retire early, what are they actually saying? They don't even know what they're going to do after they retire. They don't even know that they're going to enjoy retirement. Like, think about that, right? Because you haven't retired. You don't know what it's like to be retired for 5 years. You think it's going to be great because you imagine all of these freedoms and stuff, but you don't actually know how that's going to work. I've worked with a ton of people who have actually retired, and then what do they do after 2 or 3 years? They get bored and they come out of retirement. So we end up going through life looking at what appears to make other people happy and then chasing after that, all the while numbing ourselves. And this is where we're particularly vulnerable, because if we look at things like social media and influencers, they play completely into that, right? So how do you become a successful influencer? How do you become successful on social media? You live the good life. You demonstrate to other people that I'm going to be in shape and look at me and I'm doing all this stuff and like I'm ripped and like I'm going to like have lots of fun with my friends and we're going to go to the beach and we're going to do this and we're going to do this. And like everyone's laughing and everyone's like, yeah, like, oh my God, they're living the high life. And then you're sitting at home, you're watching that. And you're like, I want that too. Those people are happy. Social media completely amplifies this sort of idea that I can look at other people and they are showing me the recipe for happiness. They're showing me how to find purpose, but it doesn't work because we try to monkey see, monkey do. We try to replicate what we see, but it doesn't seem to work for us. Why? Because we're numb. So the next question becomes, how do we unnumb ourselves? And once we're able to do that, life will change drastically, right? So if you can start to taste again, it can become really, really easy to figure out what you enjoy eating. All you need to do is be able to taste. So how do we actually go about doing that? So this is where we've got to talk for a second about boredom, okay? So the first thing to understand is like, what is the purpose of boredom? So if we think about it, when we start to feel bored, what is our antidote to boredom? Our antidote to boredom is usually some kind of external stimulation. So what is boredom actually? Boredom is a stimulation-seeking emotional state. So our mind has figured out, hey, if we're not getting the stimulation that we want, what I'm going to do is make this person feel bored. And once they start to feel bored, we are going to seek some kind of external stimulation, which will then relieve the boredom. Because as long as we're getting stimulated from the outside, we won't feel bored. Furthermore, if we're getting stimulated from the outside, what we're going to be doing is suppressing all of our internal signals. So then the question kind of becomes, okay, how can I start reconnecting with my internal signals? And this is where if you want to start listening to your internal voice, what you actually need to do is stop drowning it out from the outside. So this is where we have to understand a little bit about where thoughts come from, right? So the thoughts in our mind come from two places. They can either come from our sensory organs or something like internally, memory or things like that. So if you kind of think about, you know, what are you excited about today? Are you excited about seeing a particular movie or playing a particular game or eating a particular food? How did you have that excitement? Where did that thought come from? Chances are it came from a sensory organ. And as long as we are being bombarded by the sensory organs, it's going to be very hard for our internal thoughts to actually arise. This is further compounded by the fact that oftentimes when our internal thoughts arise, they kind of like arise in a negative way. So the first thing that comes out of our mind tends to be kind of negative. So if I'm sitting there laying awake at night and like, you know, trying to go to sleep, I'm not going to think happy thoughts at the beginning, right? I'm going to start to think a little bit about how much I have to do. I'm going to start to feel overwhelmed. So the other reason that we want to numb ourselves is the first layer of internal voice is usually unpleasant. It's negative emotions that we've suppressed. And so what do we kind of do about this? And this is what's kind of interesting is we kind of know societally that like people will go and find their purpose, right? And how do they do that? Well, they go like on these journeys of self-discovery and they find themselves. So we know like this is not only a trope, like people actually go and do this. I kind of did it, right? So I went to India and I spent 3 months in an ashram. And we know that people will go on these like year-long wanderlust, you know, sabbatical kind of things. Sometimes people will take a gap year. And what do they do in their gap year? They like go travel the world and they hike and they go mountain climbing and all this kind of stuff. And we know that once people do this kind of thing, they come back to life. 6 months later, a year later, their hair has grown out. They have a beard, presumably if they're a dude, sometimes women, you know. And then they've got this like piercing look in their eyes and they're like rugged and they've like discovered themselves. And so let's understand that for a second scientifically. Like, wait a minute. So we know this kind of happens. And even within you, there may be a yearning to go find yourself. And then the question kind of begins, okay, hold on a second. What's the mechanism to this? What's the science behind this? Why do you have to travel in the Himalayas to go find yourself? Because aren't you with you all the time? Well, the answer is actually no, right? So in the world that we actually exist in, you're not with you. In fact, you have so much digital stimulation that you're far, far, far away from you, which also explains why you can go find yourself in the Himalayas. So when you go hiking for 6 months, what happens to your indriyas, your sense organs? What happens to your sensory input? When you're hiking for 8 hours, like you're not getting constant sensory input, right? Like you just can't. So sure, you're seeing things like maybe there's a beautiful mountain somewhere or a lake or whatever. But for the most part, you're kind of walking and just being with yourself. And so the process of finding yourself involves reducing external stimulation. And as you start to reduce external stimulation, stuff starts to come up. You get attuned to your inner voice. This is exactly what happened to me in the ashram. So I sit there and I meditate for like 8 hours and like stuff starts to come up, stuff starts to come up, stuff starts to come up. And this is also why people like going on meditation retreats. Because when you go on a meditation retreat, you are with yourself and you are away from the rest of the world. You've unplugged. And when you unplug from the rest of the world, that's when you hear your inner voice. And so it's kind of interesting because even this trope sort of makes sense, right? So what is the mechanism through which going on a self-discovery journey helps you find purpose? Because there's got to be a scientific mechanism, right? It's not just like a literary trope that is glorified in movies. Like people actually go and do this. And the mechanism is that we get away from this external stimuli so we can hear our internal voice. And so if you're kind of sitting at home and thinking to yourself, well, like, what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to go understand myself by going on a hiking journey? If you want to go for it, go for it. You can do like silent meditation retreats or whatever, but we're going to teach y'all just a very simple technique today, which is to reach the end of thought. You may say like, what does that mean? What is the end of thought? So if you close your eyes, what's going to happen is you'll have thoughts, right? Thoughts will arise, thoughts will arise, thoughts will arise. And you'll notice a particular pattern to the thoughts. Most of the thoughts will be related to something external to you. They're not anything about what you want. They're about things that you're going to need to do. Or they manifest as desires, which you may think is what you want. But that desire will also be born of an external stimulus. It's not something that you care about. You may say, I want to eat this or I want to play this or whatever. Then what you're going to notice is there's a period of intense boredom where your mind is struggling for stimulation. And so you'll feel very, 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 very intensely bored. And remember, what is boredom? Boredom is an attempt by your brain to get that hit of dopamine. This is why it makes boredom so damn uncomfortable. So if we think about the sensations within ourselves that prompt us to action, that force us into action, all of those sensations are uncomfortable. Hunger is uncomfortable. Thirst is uncomfortable. And so why does our body make us feel uncomfortable? To bludgeon us into acting. And what's the biggest club it's got? It's actually boredom. So the second phase that you're going to experience is intense, intense boredom. But then something magical will happen if you can make it through that phase. If you cannot give into the boredom, and once you know what the boredom is trying to do, you can start to have some power over it. You will find that the thoughts are going to be very rapid at the beginning, and then they'll start to slow down, slow down. And if you're lucky, you will reach the end of thought. So how long does it take to reach the end of thought? It kind of depends. But once you reach the end of thought, because remember, thoughts can come from the outside, then all you will be left with are the internal impulses. What you will have done is stopped numbing yourself and actually will be hypersensitive to internal drivers, internal goals, internal values. And the cool thing is once you get centered in those, then you can start crafting a life around them, right? Once I know from within me what I am looking for from life, once I stop listening to influencers or my Asian American parents or looking at other people like my friends or older siblings or whatever and what they've done with their life, and instead of trying to duplicate that, I'm listening to myself, then I can start to align a life out of my values. And something really magical happens there, which is that once you discover what you want from life, it's not about what is the purpose of life. This is also a misnomer. There is not a purpose or what is the purpose of life. This is kind of wild, but it's my belief that the purpose of life is not in life, it's in you. It's individualized. And this is like the big scam is that we are like, what's the purpose of life? Like, let's go ask someone really wise, right? Because if we ask someone really wise, they'll be able to give us the answer. But the whole point is that you're an individual, that you are living your life. And so if you want to make the most of it, you have to understand what you want out of it. And so in order to do that, reach the end of thought, right? And you may say, well, practically, how do I do that? Do I sit there for a while? You can sit there for a while. You can go on a long hike if you want to. You don't have to reach the end of thought all at once. So you can sit there and go on a 10-day silent meditation retreat if you want to. You can go on a hiking trip. Those are fantastic. Or you can just sit down with yourself, you know, for a half an hour, hour, whatever. Do I have to stay in lotus posture? No, you don't have to stay in lotus posture. Go for a walk and just let the thoughts run out. They will run out of steam. There'll be boredom. And then after that, you'll discover what you want. And once you discover your purpose, then you can start to align your life around it. And once you start aligning your life out of purpose, a couple of things happen. The first thing that happens is that you are able to tolerate the difficulties of life. So why is it that it's hard to do hard things? It's because it's not worth it, right? Anytime there's a challenge, if you really listen to people, what's their resistance? I don't know if it's worth it or not. But once you're aligned with your purpose, it will actually become worth it, right? Because now you know why you're doing it. Now you can afford to wake up at 6 a.m. every day because you actually care about what you're studying. This is caring for life, makes it so much easier to live and so much more enjoyable. So in order to really figure out how to make life easy, I don't think you should adopt the anti-work view of, is this all life is? I think it's a good question. And I don't think you should adopt the Sigma grind set view, which is just, hey, let me work and work and work and work and work so that I can be successful later and then I can have this gravy train, like this pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. I don't think it works. I've worked with those people. They reach the end of the rainbow. They enjoy themselves for a couple of years. Then they come into my office and they're like, I don't know what I'm doing with life. And then we go on this journey. The thing is, you don't have to wait until, you don't have to sacrifice the best years of your life to discover that purpose is not financial security. That purpose is so much more. You can actually start that today. In fact, you need to start it today. And if you can discover what your purpose is through this technique, if you can understand this, then so many things will become easy.
I know it's not practical for people to go to an ashram in India or go hiking in the mountains for 10 days, which is exactly why we built a coaching program. Our program is actually designed to help people find a sense of purpose. And what we tend to see is about a 58% increase in a client's sense of purpose in life at about 12 weeks. And what we've really found in our central hypothesis is that once you find a reason to get out of bed in the morning, once you find a reason to get off of the internet, once you find a reason to actually be motivated to do things that are difficult for you, that's what actually makes it easy for you to accomplish your goals.